Octa Non Verba is a show that's raw and real, featuring hard-hitting interviews with people that live by the ethos of actions, not words. Marcus Aurelius Anderson is a TEDx speaker, best-selling author, veteran, and leadership and mindset coach. With this show, you get to join Marcus as he goes inside the minds and experiences of the world's most successful warriors, leaders, entrepreneurs, and experts. With each episode, you're going to get the philosophies, concepts, tactics, and strategies these leaders use to turn adversity into victory. Live an extraordinary life based on actions, not words. Now, here's your host, Marcus Aurelius Anderson.
Octa Non Verba is a Latin phrase that means actions, not words. If you want to know what somebody truly believes, don't listen to their words. Instead, observe their actions. I'm Marcus Aurelius Anderson, and my guest today truly embodies that phrase. The author of Believership, The Superpower Beyond Leadership, and You Belong Here, Human First Stories, this incredible man and my good friend Mike Vacante is an author, speaker, and catalyst for expanding human potential. His website, menofthekingdom.com, talks about his message and his journey to where he is right now and the mission that he's on. Mike, I think that us just jumping right into it is going to give us the most robust conversation. But to tell everybody kind of how I met you, you were making so much of an impact in 2017, 2018, Humans First. I had the honor of speaking in Denver in 2019 for you and your group. And such a powerful movement then. And then I got to see the one in Chattanooga as well. You introduced me to some incredible people. And then all of a sudden, things kind of started happening differently in the world. So tell us about that transition and tell us about where you are now.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that it's 3 years now, right? And what has impacted all of our lives in that time? But we had been through, I think there were 13 live events, and then there were weekly calls that had gotten to, I think, four times a week. One of them was hosted out of Singapore. So literally, there was thousands of people from six different continents, dozens of countries, and they came together on a regular basis. And we were discussing, you know, what is the human condition? What can we do to best empower people to step forward and start reaching their potential? And it was an amazing journey, and it grew very organic. Mm-hmm. It came out of a belief that if we can create a pure energy source where people can dip their toe into and then become the bright, shiny star they're supposed to be without any transaction layer in there at all.
Right.
And so it was just pure energy of people putting in for the benefit of others and then, you know, receiving what they would receive through that, you know, true interaction and mm-hmm. the relationships that got built. Well, those relationships flourished and it continued to grow. So we went on to all those live events and we were having the many weekly calls. And then on one of the events that was booked, I think in February of 2020, we were in San Diego. In March, we were in Austin, Texas, and we had an event on the 11th. And I was in the airport on the 12th of March. And the event, you know, I think there's, you know, maybe a third of the people backed up because this pandemic thing was coming and there was fear surrounding, which I respected the fear, but I wasn't really honoring the fear. But when I was in the airport on the 12th coming back and the TV news was on as I was waiting for the plane, and all of a sudden the sports, all the major sports shut down. And it made me realize this might be serious. And right. And then within a week, all the schools shut down and we all then had our own, I think, tumultuous experience for the next 2 years. You know, shortly after that in the summer, the George Floyd death, murder, took place. And, you know, I live in Minneapolis, which was the mm-hmm. epicenter for that, right? Yeah. That's where it happened. The city burnt down and, you know, so social unrest that unraveled around the world was kind of, you know, right in the heart of the city that I had called home for, you know, my whole life. And so realizing that those major shifts were going on, right? That first of all, to watch all of this, I don't know, people willing to surrender their freedom and sovereignty to people that, when I say people, a government that we would be hard pressed to fully surrender ourselves to in the past, right? It's what makes us a great nation. It's why we depend on our military and all the other freedoms that are so well fought for. And to watch people just collapse and surrender really shocked me and shook me. And so I did a lot of research. I did what I did. We stayed in conversations. We had a huge live event in April that brought people together. We went all day long with many guests. I think there was, you know, a few thousand people that attended sometime during that day. And so, you know, we were trying to keep it alive. But what I was realizing is all of the ideas of people were shifting. No longer was this focus on, yes, let's go, you know, bootstrap ourselves and lift up our brothers and sisters around us, and let's make sure we're giving voice to everyone, and let's make sure that we're complying with this authoritarian message that's coming, even though we can see holes in the truth, right? And so I did a lot of research and tried to stay as well informed as I could. Tried to have discussions, and those discussions weren't wanted. And it was really interesting that from being recognized as, you know, I think a very genuine humanitarian, yes, with the relationships I was having, is that started to be questioned because I wasn't compliant with the flood of information that just never felt right. Right. So we build through our lives, as you well know, this, we start to trust our level of discernment, not crazy ideas, not conspiracies, right? Which I still believe that oftentimes the only difference between conspiracy theory and truth is time. I have another friend that says 6 months, but
I agree.
But for me, it's discernment, right? So it understanding the point of reference and being able to see those different points of opinion, relate the facts, and then kind of know from lived experience what is real and what is not, right? So we have that in sense. So what happened through all that? That was a very, very long story of what's happened since we were together and enjoying this, you know, what looked like, you know, was going to be launched for a year. There were events lined up for the year with my book launch and the Humans First events. And I pulled back and really started focusing on my smaller circle, doing the work inside myself to strengthen, to find the core of my beliefs, to make sure that I was centered in the best information I could find. That led me to learning more, reading the Bible more, becoming much more aware of my faith journey, developing that personal relationship, Old Testament, New Testament. I had never been a follower of religion. I still am not. So people ask me, what's going on with your faith journey? And I just say, I'm with him. I'm with Jesus. That's right. The rest of it kind of feels necessary for many people, but more made up in my study. So in that, I started doing work. I met a new friend during that journey. He had started this journey of bringing young men acting more fully in their faith in their community, because those are the things that were being attacked, right?
Absolutely.
Toxic masculinity, being a man is not good. We should, you know, having faith is not good. These are things that, you know, were breaking down around us. And we said, hang on a second, let's make sure we let these people know that there's some great foundation. And through that, there's been, you know, like 30 some people and two different sessions, 13 weeks. You know, it's really the special forces of men's studies, really. But these are young men that made me realize that there's still a lot of hope in this world. You know, they're just coming out of college and starting their careers. They were athletes. They were from different walks of life. Some of them had started families. And each one of them coming out of that 13-week session committed to a project, a personal project that they would take out with a one-year commitment. And so you kind of see the ripples start happening from that. And it kind of gave me peace to sit closer to the core for me and focus on that smaller circle and keep doing the work on myself, right? Keep doing the work on myself. The past wasn't as important as what I do now. What I say has very little value compared to what I'm doing. And so I had to step out and walk the walk.
Yeah. Actions, not words, right? That's everything.
That is.
It's so beautiful because, again, I feel that what happened in 2020 for you was a study in adversity. It was this litmus test for you to figure out, and for all of us, frankly, not just you, but what you're describing in your journey. And again, it shows us authoritarianism is always going to overstep, is always going to push. And if you lay down for them, they will still say that you are not flat enough, and they will still try to crush you. So eventually you get to a point where you say, you know what? And it's different for all of us, but we get to a point where we say, this is my line in the sand. This is my belief. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I believe to be true. And, you know, at that point, damn the torpedoes, this is where we're at. And I think that that's what, I already had a tremendous amount of respect for you in general because of learning from you and seeing who you are. But then again, adversity doesn't tell us who we are. It strips away all that we're not.
Yeah.
And that's when we really find out. So seeing your journey, seeing the work that you're doing, I think you and I are cut from a similar cloth where there are people that look at me and they say, you're not this enough, or you're not that enough. You're not, you're not this side enough or that side enough, or you're too much this or too much of that. And that's going to happen no matter where we go. But at the end of the day, we have to say, this is my belief. This is who I am. And I'm just being authentic to what that is. I'm telling my truth. And there's a lot of stuff that happens. There's a lot of things that we learn about ourselves in the process where potentially we're wrong. Sunk cost fallacies, a lot of things that can happen that can dissuade us. But at the end of the day, that what are you going to do? What are you willing to do consistently? The actions, not words, the octo nonverbal mentality is everything. And what you're doing with these young men is so important now because we see you and I grew up from a generation where that's what you had to do. Nothing was given to you. You had to go earn it. And frankly, you had to earn it every day. And there were these rites of passages, these little trials, these tribulations, these adversities that allowed us to build the resilience, the strength, the camaraderie.
Yes.
If we have a group, adversity binds us if we lean into each other and support each other. But it can also pull us apart if we're not willing to do that. And I think that what you were describing, what happened in those years, that's very much what happened, where people didn't have resilience. People were afraid. And people that act from a place of fear, throughout history, we see they never make the correct decision. It's always based on fear or the illusion of safety. And you and I both know that that's not the way the world works in the real world.
Right. You know, and there's a lot to that, right? Like, I love the wisdom that you shared. And when you were talking about, we're not enough of this, or, you know, don't have the right formula. And I thought to myself right away is, when has comparison ever been of value to us?
Right? I agree.
It's like, that is the definition of surrender, is when you start comparing, like, stop comparing. Yeah. And so when others use a comparative method to measure us, we have to just reject it wholeheartedly. The feedback on certain items or elements, or, you know, change your hairstyle, or stop swearing so much, or, you know what I mean? There's, there can be some positive feedback, but to tell you that in your soul, it's missing an element, we need to reject that. And also the journey, right? So I think of when things get tough and the adversity, and you talked about, you know, the strength. And you think of, you know, like Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill. It, and you saying, you know, when you're laying flat, you're not flat enough. It's like, hey, at least Sisyphus had an advantage. He was on his feet, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Like society was trying to lay us flat. And from that point, we can't pour into others. And I think you and I believe this so much because I watch you pour out into other people so very well. And that is the goal, is we have value when we're sharing it out. We don't have value when we're taking it from others. And the world of plunder has been around forever, right? You know, taking a train through Italy, I was amazed that every hill had a castle on it. And I started thinking back along that, just like, man, how much time did they spend just plotting to run to the next hill and take their stuff?
Yeah, that's it.
How much of that mentality is still innate to us? That, I think, is one of the great missions and opportunities, Marcus, is to make sure we're boosting you and others that know that the great gift is the outpouring, right? And the great well of that outpouring is this heartbeat. This pump doesn't quit. It's pumping blood, it's pumping love, and we have an opportunity to share that out.
It's everything. I always say that I learned from Guru Dan Nasano, Bruce Lee's protege. He says that one teach to learn. The idea is when you're teaching these young men or women or whomever, when you're giving them this knowledge, we learn as well because we get feedback. Sometimes we see mistakes that reinforce, but we also may see an additional insight that we couldn't have had any other way. And then it goes from one teach to learn. It goes into one teaches to learn.
Yeah.
And now it becomes this full circle. And now, like you said, we're pouring out to others and that allows us to create that reciprocity.
Yes.
And back to that idea of wanting to get stronger, that resilience, right?
Yes.
If we want to be stronger, we have to also be just as willing to accept that strength as we are the adversity necessary to strengthen us in the process.
Right.
And I think we lose sight of that. We want to shortcut it. We want to circumvent it. We want to get from point A to point D without doing the work to get between there.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people out there now that will try to sell you that bill of goods, but at the end of the day, the direct path is the shortcut.
Yes.
Trying to go around these things only is I do understand Musashi's mentality of there are many paths to the top of the mountain, and that's correct. But understanding that there will be work necessary, which is what you're doing, which is what you've been doing for a long time, that's what we have to just make peace with. Once we understand that it's not going to get easier, that magically makes it easier because now we just get committed to the process and we just keep taking a step forward every day, whether we're celebrated or not, whether we're acknowledged or not.
Yes.
And that's the key.
Well, you know, forging that path, right? Forge it and then have to walk down it to understand it before we bring others down that path. And that's the thing is I watch so many near me go down a path that I know the discovery toward the end is not going to be what they wanted, and they need to know, and I've let them know that when you come back, I am here. Or when we get out to the fringe, it's important that we have a return path. We can't just go out to the fringe and hang out there, right? If we're willing to go out to the fringe, we have to have the strength to encourage people back to the center. And I think we lose that a little bit. And, you know, I'm a pretty simple man, and I think of, you know, what you were saying about the resilience and everything and, you know, one teach, two learn, and the full circle is, you know, there's two really important words in that. Oops and ouch. I'm going to make mistakes. Oops. I'm going to recognize it and correct it. I'm going to experience some pain and I'm going to welcome it. I'm not going to avoid pain at all times. And so every once in a while, I have to learn something. I made an error. Oops. And I have to accept the pain of growth. Ouch. So ups and outs are just, you know, really kind of simple things to live by.
But they're great, right? Pain and discomfort are the best teachers. And back to your path looked like it was going a certain direction in 17, 18, 19. But you and I are great examples, in my opinion, on our paths. To anybody that's listening to us right now and you feel lost on your path, feeling lost on your path is part of the path.
Right.
That's simply part of it. We've all been there. And if you see a path before you that is well-maintained and well-manicured and well-lit, chances are that's not your path. It's probably somebody else's. And dare I say, it leads down a path of mediocrity in many ways. And there is a time to do that, but you have to understand that the path that is not guarded, the path that is easily acceptable, is probably not what you want if you're trying to get more from yourself.
Right.
We can't be surprised when we find adversity. We need to be surprised when we do not.
Yes.
And then say, oh, there's nothing guarding this path. It's probably not what I want. And that helps us endeavor forward.
Yeah. And I think that's really powerful, especially with the events that unfold daily in our lives that we see right now, right? And it's like, you can't find yourself in a mob. And you do not know the direction you're being led in a mob. So think about that. Just like question that. There is likely no oops. You're not going to learn anything in the middle of a mass. And there's likely no danger in there because you're in a mob, right? It's so there's very little out. We're given a gift of our own individual sovereignty and a brain that can expand and a heart that, you know, pumps pure energy. And we have the strength to forge our own path and certainly think for ourselves, to act on our values and our beliefs. Crowds are wonderful when they're cheering in a sports arena. Other than that, I just would avoid crowds.
Agree. I absolutely agree. And it's, again, it kind of gives us an understanding of how important it is to, it's easy to claim that we're, you know, brave when there's no danger, when there's no barbarians at the gates.
Right.
And we see a lot of that false bravado now, but we did see sort of it was sort of a test to see, leaning on people, what happens when push comes to shove? What are you willing to do? And then by you embracing your adversity, that hardship, and not fighting against it, not having this, woe is me, this isn't fair, bargaining, this, you went through the five stages of denial, anger, bargaining, depression, dare I say, and then
yes,
acceptance. But once you were there, you immediately started to act. So that's what I think is a incredible testament to the importance of this. And when you acted in that emboldened manner, you emboldened everybody around you to do the same thing, to at least say, well, Mike's standing up and saying this, and he's an incredible man. And he very much looks at all sides of this. And that's what I love about the way that your philosophy is, especially now. In my mind, what we're seeing now is that no one side is completely 100% correct about every single thing. There are all these like shades of gray, 80-20, whatever it is. And understanding that helps us realize that having these foundational truths, these things that you're talking about, are the key. And then we have to go out and have an ouch and an oops enough times to where now we start to see, okay, for me, this is what is true. For me, this is where I'm at in the journey.
Right.
And those are the things that keep us really grounded. Could you give us, because there's a lot of people that are listening now that either have young people in their lives, children, or maybe are younger that are listening to this, what advice would you give them to start to try to figure out what these things are and begin down this path of the work? Because many of them, if they're in their teens or early 20s, they were dissuaded from this sort of mentality through school.
Right, right. First and most important, I believe, is choose your food well. And I don't mean 100% what you're eating, although that's really important. But what you're being fed mentally has to be thought through. And the challenge to that is it's difficult to go find the alternative. And the alternative isn't in the most available sources. And so we were at one point, and I think we're still, hopefully, my kids were when they went through school, you learn how to do a research report. And every piece of information that maybe triggers a little bit of doubt, go do the research. Because research is available, you just have to work for it. It's not going to be fed to you. It's not coming on your death scroll, no matter what app you go to.
Yes.
That's doom, right? Because you're being fed what you're most looking at. And what we're most looking at isn't taking a lot of thought. And that's why I say, take the inputs, trust that doubt, right? Those instincts are there for a reason. We're amazing creatures. And we can't deny that innate ability. Mm-hmm. And then when you have that doubt, go select your food well, your brain food. What are we being fed? And the food that seems less available is probably the better food.
I love that analogy. That's a great analogy. It's the truth.
You know, and I've said this to several people, and it doesn't always go over well. So I'll say it in public again, and just, you know, this could be an ouch moment, but I've raised 5 now adult children. And one thing I can say is I'm proud of them for never feeling compelled to go stand in a mob holding a cardboard sign with something on. They are all pretty grounded individuals. And I'm proud of that, right? Like, I feel like I was the least likely guy to get that lucky. But they have self-belief. Their relationships with each other is important. Family has value. And although society comes in and tries to rip the importance of that away from them a little bit, they kind of scoff at society saying, no, like, I know that's of value. You can't have any of that. And so that's really it, is make sure when you say the advice to those that are young, have a core. And I'm not going to profess what that core is, but we all know for ourselves what that core is. Make sure that our children know that core. Let them learn and expand outside of that, but always provide a path back. And that is something that they will carry forward. They'll find others that share that value. And you don't have to fight every fight, right? So it's amazing how many people I meet, young people now, that, you know, they're bent on changing the world. It's like, I can really change the world. These things are important. There's, you know, all of these issues. There's a climate issue. There's a social justice issue. There's monetary collapse. There's, you know, there's all kinds of trouble around us. And they want to go fix that. And I think it's really important that make sure the dishes are done first. If you want to clean up the world, make sure your closet's tidy. Like, hang up your clothes. Because if you can't tidy and control your own environment, you're not going to be able to get out there and control the world, no matter how big the mob is or how pretty your banner is. So focus on the core. Make sure that you're doing that work first.
And that's the truth. All leadership begins with self-leadership.
Yeah.
And like you say, if I'm allowing somebody else to dictate to me what I should be doing, most of the time, that is not going to be in my best interest. It's going to be in their best interest.
Yes.
And now it becomes a form of control, which means what else? They dissuade me from digging deep. They dissuade me from questioning. They dissuade me from trying to figure out, why does this feel so hollow and false? Why does this feel artificial and unsustainable? And if you feel like that, like you said, your instincts are usually good. There's a reason why we have these instincts in us as human for millions of years. Trust it, or at least acknowledge it, because if you don't and you try to just act like it's not there, you will go down a path that will not serve you. It'll serve somebody else.
You know, it's amazing also in a professional setting, right? A young person in a professional setting that is being told or being directed to to do something or act in a way that they feel isn't correct, or they have a different idea of how it could be better, that person that stands in their core can actually make that recommendation. They have the strength to not get into an argument. This isn't a confrontation, but it's, I understand what I'm being asked to do. I understand the patterns that are in place. However, my experience says it can improve in this way. We can, and so you respectfully question authority, and you're assertive enough to share an idea. And more often than not, when it comes from a place of that solid base, you're not whining, you're not complaining, you're expressing ideas, you know your values, you know your core, that gets listened to. And then people say, we might not make that adjustment that you just suggested, but I'm going to ask for your opinion next time we have a decision. And I'm going to keep you close to my team because as we grow, you're growing with us. I want you to be free in your career and do whatever you want, but in the back of my mind, I'm actually thinking I'm holding you as a hostage because you're the kind of people we want in this company.
That's it. That's what leadership is, right?
Yeah. But
leaders are not people that just stand around bitching and moaning about how something is wrong or point out the problems. Anybody can do that.
Right.
But what are we trying to do? We're trying to embolden people to lead, meaning, I don't know if this is the correct answer, but what if we tried this? What if this alternate path may give us what we need? What if we had this indirect approach that may somehow, I mean, the whole reason why people talk about diversity so much is because they say you can learn so much from other people. Well, you can have diversity within the group that you're in right now. They may have a different opinion or a different experience or understanding. And if we had the humility to say, okay, what are they seeing that I don't? It's amazing what we can be enlightened by.
Yes, yes. And, you know, you ask such brilliant questions. And even as we were, you know, starting today, one of the things you ask is, what are the outcomes? What are the objectives, right? And I think that's really critical to keep in mind. Just being out in the noise isn't a reward unto itself, right? There needs to be a purpose, right? And, you know, through our experiences, whether they're athletic or like the clock is on and they're keeping score, right? And so be aware that this is a real game. This isn't a scrimmage. This isn't practice. This is, you know, the scoreboard is on, clock's ticking, and the goals count. I think we lose a little bit of that competitive spirit. And competitive spirit is a very positive thing in my world. And again, it's not taking, it's participating and it's going and achieving, right? And so I like to think, and with my family, and then again to young, you know, winning is a good thing. Let's go win. Winning is good. Never apologize for win. Those that don't win well cheat. And so go win well.
I absolutely agree. And it's also a great, they say that competition is the thief of joy, but it's actually what breeds excellence. Mm. So if we stop wondering or worrying about these things that are really not that important and just say, listen, this is the priority. This is what we're trying to achieve. Here's the other part. When we win, it helps us get stronger.
Yes.
And the other part of this is, I don't just mean physically, but if I am mentally more resilient, if I am financially stronger, that allows me to help those that may not be as financially strong. If right. I am mentally more resilient, it allows me to not give this person space in my mind or not get involved in a silly, unnecessary argument that's going to have no resolution whatsoever. I'm never going to change this person's mind. Yes. Or even from a physical capacity. If I am physically stronger and I know the warrior ethos and I have that at my disposal, now I can defend somebody that cannot defend themselves. I can pick somebody else that is not able to pick themselves up.
Yes.
And that's what our in my mind, if we had these attributes and we've worked on them for as long as we have, it's our duty. It is our responsibility to do those things.
Right.
Even if nobody else around us is going to do it.
And when you know that you have that, the final ability, right? If it comes down to a final conflict, you have that, you're less likely to use it. So there's many alternatives to resolution. Let's get through that one and that one, right? Strength of mind overcomes strength of physical strength many, many times, and we trust the physical strength, right? Yes. When we know that there's this meanness inside, we don't share it. We get through many, many, many layers. It has to be probably, you know, physical harm, personal harm, or harm to those around us that unleash, because you know that strength. And so you hold it in reserve and you build all these other strengths on top of it. And I really believe that the world's not going to get easier. It's getting more complex. It's moving faster. The challenges are going to, I think, accelerate for each generation, you know, going forward. And so building those strengths is really critical. And I don't see enough work going into that preparation. You know, the quick, just surrender right away and then you'll get swept up and you'll get taken care of. And I haven't, that's a bad way to approach the undertow, right? It's like, we're in like a wave right now, and we have to be strong enough to hold others and give them footing and the strength to get through that undertow, because it's dangerous. And I think what is being taught very often is, it's going to be fine. Just let the undertow take you, and you know, you'll rest well with the masses, and let's save people from that danger. Walk right forward. And I think of, you know, I was with my family. We were down in the Bahamas, and they were pretty young, and we were in the water, and it was a particularly big swell day with the waves, and we were on the beach, and we went out, and the kids, like, they had a hard time getting back, right? And so it's, you get the little ones, you get them back. It's like, let's just, we won't kind of do that anymore. But as I was doing that, there was an older man out there who was way too proud to ask for help, but he was having a hard time coming back in that undertow. And I walked out next to him after I kind of got the kids to safety and didn't want to take his dignity away or anything else, but just kind of came out near him and then just kind of offered my arm out like this. And he grabbed it and we walked together. No words said. Restore his dignity, help him through that undertow, because it's a very real thing. It's strong.
And that's the reality in this world, as you say, especially as it continues to accelerate. We don't have the luxury of being a pacifist. We don't have the luxury of just standing by and seeing what happens and then picking the side when we start to see what direction the tide goes. I have seen many people that call themselves pacifists because they don't have the courage to even call themselves a coward. And they don't say that because they don't even have the courage to acknowledge the potential of them having to have any martial component. They don't even want to look at a situation where they may have to get out of a riptide or out of an undercurrent, where they may have to defend themselves or somebody else. And this may sound graphic, but if you look at violent encounters, you hear about police reports. If somebody is attacked with a blade, even if they call themselves a pacifist, every single one of them will instinctively bring their arms up and they will have defensive wounds on some part of their body, because that is what the human instinct is. Mm-hmm. And if we allow society to try to shame us or breed that out of us, then we are not allowing, first of all, we're not able to defend anything, like you say. It wants to kind of put us in with this other mass grave of these people that have given up and capitulated and stopped trying to make themselves better. And then frankly, what sort of person that does that attract to us? What sort of people does that make us want to be around? We're around similar people that have already given up, that want to make fun of it, that want to try to pile on to other people that are trying to make a difference.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when we depend on others to get what we need, how far do the rations spread? Right. And wouldn't we rather be in a place where we can have the ability to share out rations when needed? Let's bring people to the better place. And each of us has a different idea, perhaps, of what that looks like. And we don't have to take other people's stuff to have value, but we can go create value. The opportunities and the means are around us, right? Yes. We just need, you know, a little bit of ingenuity, a lot of belief. And then, as you share with all of us so brilliantly, more action, less words.
All day. Tell us about menofthekingdom.com and tell us about the House of Heroes. Tell us about these things.
Yeah. So the Men of the Kingdom is a journey that I bumped into along the way through a new friendship that I found through kind of this period and this study. Dean Stinchfield launched this. He has a group. They've been doing it for a few years now. It's been primarily local. It's opened up in a couple of college campuses. Dean knew that I have a passion for this and invited me in, and we started looking at it. And one of the projects that I've put in place now is, first of all, to engage myself more fully and become part of the core of that. So it's not just another thing. It's not a project. Like, don't be on the board of directors, be on the front lines kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's where I belong. I'm better as a blunt instrument, and we should know that about ourselves, know our strengths. But, you know, be engaged in the work and mentoring young men. So menofthekingdom.com is there. It's pretty rich with content. There's videos on the principles. There's testimonies on there. They have a podcast that they've launched now recently. They've started to put a newsletter out. And one of the things Dean and I are now exploring that I think I will kind of take the initiative on is now to go expand it. And what I envision is probably doing pop-up events. You know, it's a pretty intensive 13-week study. And so people need to opt in and commit. And I think the way to share that opportunity is to do pop-up events and go create the energy around it. Get enough curiosity where people are raising their hands saying, I want to hang with those guys. And so I think that's next. And, you know, the House of Heroes, I hesitate and smile a little bit because it is a new spark for me. And I don't necessarily look for the spark, but I recognize it when it's there. And I also know that I'm supposed to act on it. And when I say supposed to, that, you know, my belief system, my faith, and my faith journey says that I'm handing you this, you know, that's a calling. You know, nobody's going to whisper in your ear. There's no explosions. Like, stop looking for false signs. Like, I'm giving this to you. So I'm reading through the book of Ezra, and as Ezra is being commissioned to go rebuild the walls of Jerusalem after they've been taken down, right? And everybody's been carted off to Babylon. And so they're scattered and they're intermarried. And, you know, Judah and Israel no longer really exist. Mm-hmm. And they're called back to go rebuild the walls. And in doing so, there's also the tomb of David, right? The ancestor of Jesus. And, you know, as we come to Christmas, you know, share that story. The Messiah was promised from that day, from the lineage of David. Anyway, the tomb of David, and then there was this building next to it that was called the House of Heroes. And I've done a bunch of research. I've looked into it hard. There's not much description of it in the Bible. So I went to different biblical scholar readings or writings and dug in, and there's a lot of guesswork around it. So it's mentioned. Nobody knows what it is, and I know what it can be.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, during that human's first journey, right, there's like a lot of people came to that. There was a lot of energy around it, and it was done in purity. There was again, no transaction inside of that. It was done for the strength and well-being of others, and people participated with that in mind. And when they wanted something different, they realized that that wasn't a great fit. And a lot of those people, a lot of those paths led to really alternative programs and alternative thinkings. And that's great. Everybody kind of went out and followed their own path. That was the idea, is, you know, become a bright, shiny star on your own. But House of Heroes, I see, is a place that is men and women, and it's different beliefs and it's different faiths, but it, those that know we have the possibility of a better future and we have the strength to enhance and influence and make it happen, let's find that common ground. Let's find that theoretical house that is nondescript. Let's give it description. Let's come together. That's our lodge. That's a place we hang in theory, and come and get strengthened. That's where we can come home and get cleaned up so we can go out and, you know, take on the next challenge. Come back, get strengthened, get cleaned up and go back at it, because, you know, there's a house of heroes here that are on your side. So it's a concept. I've put pen to paper in this last week because it's that fresh.
Beautiful.
I'm putting action to it by getting a small group together and having discussions about where we start. Mm. Because setting an action on a date has to be the first step. I don't want it to be theory. I want, you know, I'm not going to build a house. I don't need a lodge. We don't need another island. Bad things seem to happen on islands.
True. You're right.
But that philosophical house of heroes, where we come back, we get strengthened, we clean ourselves up and empowered for the next journey, is kind of along the lines of Men of the Kingdom. So there's congruency in that.
Yes.
But I'm trying to stay compelled to go out and do something good for my fellow human. I know that's my real job now. I'm not a wage earner anymore. So that burden is out of the way.
Yes.
And so, you know, I can actually go create better value than, you know, seeing what plunder I can drag back to the fort.
I absolutely agree. And there's something about heroes when we look throughout history, whether it be David, whether it be Achilles, whether it be Caesar or Alexander the Great.
Right.
These are, if you look historically, these were men that in the face of adversity, in the heat of battle, in chaos, when it's screaming all around, they were the ones that were able to take a direct action that rallied troops, that turned the tide, that circumvented, that was able to flank, that was able to envelop.
Yes.
But it took that one person that was willing to step in and say, hey, I've got these double plumes on the top of my helmet.
Right.
Here I am, and I'm coming.
Yes.
And that's what has to happen. So this idea of this house of heroes, this place to come back and to be courageous enough to acknowledge that necessity, to say, this is where I come back to lick my wounds, to take off my armor, to recharge, to be redoubled in these efforts,
right,
to embolden others so that they embolden me, create that reciprocity. Now, it not only allows you to refill your cup, but what you're putting in that cup is much more concentrated and much more powerful. So now when you pour out, you don't have to empty yourself entirely for one singular moment. You can continue to just create this practically limitless energy and potential. And I'm excited to see what you do with that.
I love that. And thank you for getting it verbalized in a public forum, because I can go back and revisit it. And you know, every once in a while, I'm going to have to hit myself on the back of the head with that. Like, keep going. Keep this. Not in it. You can't nap. It's time to move. And I do believe strongly, Marcus, that the world needs, right? And we talked about young people. We talked about people with young kids and families. You know, how are we educating? Like, where is that strong base of society? Because the examples of it is not what's being publicized. So again, the stuff that's being fed doesn't feel like nutrition. So finding that way to continue to bring, you know, good spiritual, physical, mental nutrition is, yeah, it's a worthy reason to get out of bed.
And sometimes that may be the only thing that gets us out of bed, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The adversity will give you 1,000 reasons to quit.
Yeah.
You have to find that one to keep going, and that may be it.
Yeah, and the hope of those people that then come around us, right, is it's like, yes, it is there. Why is it so hidden? There's many of these brilliant, strong, you know, core-based people that I know they're there now. There is great hope, right? Yes. The noise is a lie, right? You know, evil is loud, good is quiet. And so let's give voice to that good. I think there's a need and a brilliant opportunity to go down that path.
Yeah, there's absolutely a vacuum here. And fighting the good fight is the way that we're able to make that impact in a positive manner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mike Vacante, we can follow you on LinkedIn. We can go to menofthekingdom.com to learn more about what you're talking about. And I have a feeling that by the time people start consuming that content, that they will get little pieces and tidbits about the House of Heroes and what you have in store with that as well.
Thank you. You know, and I spend a lot of my time in a smaller circle, truly, Marcus. And so, you know, the one-on-one time with people, I invite, you know, please reach out. Be happy to talk, to learn more, and help how we can.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Okta Nonverba. If this message resonates with you, please share it out with others on social media. Hit that subscribe button and leave a review for the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. To learn more, please go to MarcusAureliusAnderson.com and join his Okta Nonverba inner circle to get exclusive content, news, and information. Until next time, remember, talk is cheap. Live your life based on actions, not words.